kayo'y nakikinig sa SBS Filipino. Pakinggan niyo pa ang kwento sa sbs.com.au/filipino.
With me is Claudia Farhart, SBS correspondent who has been in Manila, particularly in Bajo de Basinloc last month. And we're going to talk about her recent visit. Good day, Claudia.
Hi, Maribel. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thanks for your time. So you went to Bajo de Basinloc in February, if I'm not mistaken?
Yeah, so last month we drove to Basinloc from Manila. Very long drive, very beautiful part of the Philippines as well when you get down there in Zambales. And we didn't go out to the Bajo de Basinloc to the Scarborough Shoal, but we met with the fishermen right on the shores of the South China, West Philippine Sea, who have relied on that area for a really long time, for decades really, for their income, for their fishing income. Spent some time with them and heard that these days really none of them can reach that area anymore. They were still trying until recently, but the confrontations with the Chinese Coast Guard, they said, had become too frequent and too violent. Fishermen were getting hurt. There was a risk of fishermen getting killed. There have been incidents where fishermen from other communities have been killed. So these days, for safety, they just stay very, very close to their own municipal waters.
And so what has life been like for them if they rely on that for their daily bread?
Yeah, it has been a real struggle. So when you stay in municipal waters close to the shoreline, close to the villages in Basinloc, the fish communities in those waters are nowhere near as populous. There's just not as much fish there. There are not as high grade fish there as, you know, out in the Scarborough Shoal or Bajo de Basinloc. I mean, that's one of the most fertile fishing grounds in all of Asia, which is part of why I guess it's become so hotly fought over. So the way it was explained to me is that nowadays the fishermen are making in a month half of what they used to be able to make in a week. So if they used to make, you know, the equivalent of $100 Australian in a week, they're now only making $50 in a month. That's how much their income has dropped. And it's affecting the whole community because there's less fish. The price of fish has also gone up. And in these fishing communities, I mean, it's really interesting if you love food like I do, going to different places in a country because, you know, they're not eating as much sort of chicken and pork in this community. All the sort of meals are centered around fish. And everyone goes to the fish market in the morning to buy the fish, you know, the fresh fish that's just come in as the fishermen have come back from their overnight fishing trip. But the price is going up because there's just less fish available. So whether you're a fisherman's family, or just a regular person in the community, it's affected everyone.
And because of this, an industry is dying, isn't it?
Yeah, they are still able to make ends meet, but only because they have had to be incredibly thrifty, really. So they've had to lower their you know, expectations for how much money they're going to have in the community, how much they're going to be able to spend. They're really only getting by day. So it's affecting things like, you know, sending kids to school and trying to support families and things like that. There are a lot of people who have had to pause building their homes, for example, because they don't have the income at the moment. So it was interesting speaking to them. They're not overly dramatic about the situation. They're very, you know, we're going to make it work. We have to survive. We have to remain positive. But then the more time you spend with them, the more you see the impact that it's having on this whole community, yeah.
So you've seen Filipino resilience at work?
Yes, very much so. And there was a real sense of, you know, what can we do about it, really? This is the situation. We have to deal with it. And they didn't want to overplay or exaggerate how much they were struggling. It was really only something you could see if you did sort of stay and spend some time with them. Yes, an incredibly resilient community.
Given the limited time and limited space where they can fish, is there anything that they are doing in coordination with the government to find other means of livelihood or to find other ways to continue on fishing?
Well, it's interesting. A lot of them have started to look for other jobs, as you mentioned, other ways of making money. So some of them told us actually when they go out and there's no fish to catch, because sometimes they'll go out for 12 hours and there'll be nothing, they collect bottles and things like that to trade in, so for very small amounts of money. So really people are looking for anything. They are trying to shift to other forms of income where possible, but this is a fishing community. These coastal communities on the shores of the West Philippine South China Sea, really fishing is the only way they've made, the primary way they've made money for a long time. So what is the government trying to do? The government, the Philippine government, has ramped up its own Coast Guard deployments as well into these most hotly contested areas, trying to keep a presence there to, I guess, in a way, protect the fishermen. Having said that, they cannot compete with the numbers that the Chinese Coast Guard and the Chinese People's Liberation Army Navy is sending in ships. So last year, around Bajo de Masamok, Scarborough Shoal area, the number of Chinese vessels recorded reached an all-time high. And actually, China maintained almost a constant presence in that area for the entire year. I think there was only something like 8 days of the year last year that Chinese ships were not spotted or monitored around the Scarborough Shoal. And so far this year, I mean, the numbers are a little bit delayed, but in January, it actually looks like the numbers of Chinese ships in the Philippines exclusive economic zone had doubled. So the Philippines is trying to, with its partners, with its allies, you know, with the US, with Australia, Japan, Canada, New Zealand now as well, trying to hold joint patrols, joint drills to sort of counter some of this. But it's really difficult to counter the numbers that China is putting out there, particularly now that the US's focus is so firmly on the war in the Middle East and less so on the Asia Pacific.
Can you give us an idea how far the fishing community is from the area where the vessels are, the Chinese vessels?
Yes. So, yeah, Bajo de Masamok, or the Scarborough Shoal, is still a couple hundred kilometres from Masamok. But the fishermen told us that the Chinese vessels are actually now coming much, much closer to the coastline. So they're now seeing them about 50 kilometres away, which sounds far, but the Philippines exclusive economic zone spans hundreds and hundreds of kilometres. So when you're talking about 50, it's pretty close. And these are communities that are used to going quite deep into the exclusive economic zone for fishing. You know, they used to go out and be stationed there for days and days on a big fishing trip to somewhere like the Shoal, for example. So they're saying now their concern isn't just about, you know, what's happening around the Shoal, but also what's happening even closer to the coastline. Now that there is this evidence that Chinese ships are being spotted even closer. The Filipino fishermen that I met with, though, are tend to be operating in very small wooden boats.
Yes.
Just with like two people.
Bangkas, that we call them.
And these Chinese, really, it's really interesting to see them. It's a two-man operation. They kind of just go together and it's quite small. They're no longer using the bigger boats they used to take all the way to the Shoal because they do worry that bigger boats will be a bigger target. So they're in these small wooden boats, and the Chinese Coast Guard and Chinese Navy has big metal ships, right, with water cannons attached, they're armed, things like that. So that's why the Filipino fishermen said that they really just want to stay as close as possible to the shore, because as soon as they see these big Chinese ships coming, they say they just feel this sense of fear. So many of them in the past have had experiences with being water cannoned or with being shadowed. Some said that sometimes Chinese ships will drive right towards them and only move at the very last second. If you're in a tiny wooden boat and you have this big steel ship coming towards you, imagine that would be pretty terrifying. So they are concerned about all of this coming even closer now.
What's the mood like in the community in particular? Because you mentioned that they were coming closer and closer to the coast. So what's the mood like in the community?
One thing that was sad is that there is a bit of a sense of resignation about the situation. They do feel that it's not a fair fight and that they can't really do anything to fight back. They feel that their government also can't necessarily fight back effectively because of the huge power imbalance. I mean, we're talking about the most dominant military power in Asia, you know, versus the Philippines, which has partners. But its partners also are sort of like Australia, not the biggest military powers either. The US obviously is, that, as we chatted about, has other priorities right now. So there was this feeling in the community. I know we asked a lot of people, what can the Philippines do? What do you want the government to do? And a lot of people said, well, they can't do anything. I mean, it's now been 10 years since the arbitral ruling at The Hague found that China's 9-line claim to the Scarborough Shoal had no basis in international law, and that China was violating the Philippines' sovereign rights in that area. But in the 10 years since, that ruling hasn't changed anything. You know, China doesn't acknowledge it, and the rest of the world has been sort of powerless to force them to. So I think there is a real feeling in the community now of, this is the way it is, this is the way it's going to be, and we just have to adjust to it, even though we know it's not necessarily right or fair or in line with international law.
Have you seen, was there talk about them leaving the community, finding somewhere else to live?
Interestingly, there wasn't. This was one point people made, that they felt that walking away would be to sort of cede their rights, which is why a lot of them are still trying to fish, even though it's no longer the most lucrative career for them, perhaps, or there would be better ways for them to make money. But they say if they stop trying to fish, that would be sort of akin to saying to China, we give up and you can have these waters. So they don't want to leave the communities. A lot of these families have lived in these communities for a really long time. They haven't, you know, moved there for fishing. They fish because that's where they're from, and that's been the way of life there for generations, really hundreds of years. So the families I met were definitely not speaking about moving away. They actually were quite the opposite, quite determined to stay, but still a little resigned about the situation.
Most often when we talk about the South China Sea, we see it as a territorial dispute. But it's more than that, isn't it?
Yeah, this is something that we also try to get at with people. What is this really about? It's for the Philippines and for the Filipino fishermen that I met with. It's about a prime fishing ground. This is, you know, the area they need to access to make their money, the way they have for decades.
What can the international community do to help?
This is the tough part. What can you actually do about it? Because legally, the international community has done 10 years ago in that arbitral ruling, I suppose, at The Hague, what should be the sort of correct and proper process under international law, and it hasn't changed anything. So in the Philippines, now the focus is really on expanding their defense partnerships with a broader network of partners and allies, not just the United States, because we know that over the past year, since Donald Trump returned to office, that the United States militarily and security-wise has had a really scattered focus. You know, one minute it'll be looking at Venezuela, then Greenland. Now it's fighting a war in Iran. The focus hasn't really been on Asia at all. And there's concern in Asia that, you know, the US might not anymore be the most reliable of partners. So the Philippines does seem to be very focused on expanding that partnership. It's always been had a long-term partnership with Australia, but it's developing that partnership further. Just before I was there, they were doing joint drills with Australia in the South China Sea. But it's also made new agreements with Japan, with Canada, with New Zealand more recently. And I think the Philippines sees its best bet at protecting itself now as being having a really broad, reliable network of partnerships. It's interesting that Australia seems to be a country that the Philippines is looking at as a more reliable partner now, not to replace the United States, because nobody militarily has the power or capacity to do what the United States does, and the Philippines is well aware that it has to keep that relationship good, even if it feels that the US isn't quite focused on it and its issues in the South China Sea. But I think Australia is now seen as a very reliable partner there. The Australian government has invested some money in upgrading several air bases on the island of Luzon, for example, over the past few months. Quietly in the background, there are a lot of things happening that seem to be suggesting the partnership between the Philippines and Australia is getting even deeper. So I think in the future, there's going to be perhaps less of a focus on sort of international law, rules-based order way of trying to find a solution to this, because it doesn't seem Beijing is going to engage on that level. And there's going to be a much more practical focus on the Philippines expanding its defensive capabilities with its partners to try and counter China that way.
Finally, Claudia, going into the community in Masinloc, what did you learn about the Filipinos?
These are not greedy people. They didn't want to get back to Bajo de Masinloc or the Scarborough Shoal because they could make, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars in fishing. They wanted to do it because, you know, if they go there for a few days a month, they could make enough money to bring back to the community to support their family for the rest of the month, just to maintain their basic sort of standard of living. It was good to go there to understand their motivation. It was good to hear about their experiences that they have faced at sea encountering these Chinese vessels. And it was, to be honest, they were very frank about how scared and afraid it had made them. I mean, you know, men and grown men don't often love to admit their feelings about this, but a lot of them said to us when we sat down to talk that they were really scared. They thought that they might die. They thought that they might get hit by these Chinese vessels. I guess what did we learn about them? I guess these are villages, communities that are just trying to support their families at the end of the day, but they don't want to do that at the expense of potentially losing their lives. So a lot of them have now had to make the decision of choosing safety over financial security, I guess.
Thank you for your time, Claudia Farhart from SBS News.
Absolutely, Maribel. Thank you so much.
Nice yung bang makinig na iba pang kwento na tulad ito? Makinig sa Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, Spotify, o sa iba pang podcast apps.